Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Separation of Powers Special Preview Edition. Today our featured guest is Northwestern University Law Professor and Federalist Society co-founder Stephen Calabresi, discussing Free Enterprise Fund v. Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, a case in which the Supreme Court granted certiorari on Wednesday, May 20, 2009. Thanks for tuning in. In this special cert grant episode of SCOTUS Cast, we take a look ahead to an important case that the Supreme Court will hear during its October 2009 term. In this case, the Supreme Court will consider whether the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002 unconstitutionally violated the separation of powers or the Appointments Clause by granting the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board far-reaching executive power and having its members appointed by the Securities and Exchange Commission and removable only for cause. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Calabresi.
The Supreme Court this week granted cert in Free Enterprise Fund and Beckstead and Watts against Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. And this case promises to be the biggest separation of powers case in a generation. It involves the constitutionality of aspects of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act regulating the public accounting industry, and it raises major separation of powers issues. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act was passed in 2002 after the Enron and WorldCom accounting scandals. And because of concern over those accounting scandals, Sarbanes-Oxley created a new independent agency unlike any other that Congress had previously created. The agency is called the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, and I will refer to it hereafter as the board. The board consists of five members who are appointed by the Securities and Exchange Commission to help regulate audits and accounting and to ensure that audits and accounting are done properly throughout the United States. The Public Company Accounting Oversight Board has the power to conduct inspections, investigations, bring enforcement actions, and impose sanctions. So it has both prosecutorial law enforcement powers and also some power to administer sanctions. The five members of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, in addition to being appointed by the Securities and Exchange Commission, can only be removed for cause. What that means is they don't serve at the pleasure of the president or of some other executive branch official, but they instead have to be proven to have engaged in malfeasance of some kind or failure to perform their job in order for them to be fired. The Public Company Accounting Oversight Board is thus an independent agency within the SEC, and the SEC, or Securities and Exchange Commission, is itself an independent agency in the executive branch. So the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board is an independent agency squared. It's an independent agency within an independent agency. Not surprisingly, this highly unusual, indeed unprecedented, structure for an important regulatory entity was challenged in court. This case arose out of an investigation that the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board was conducting of a firm called Beckstead and Watts, based in Nevada. This is a Nevada accounting firm. Beckstead and Watts is a member of the Free Enterprise Fund, a group devoted to promoting free markets. And together, Free Enterprise Fund and Beckstead and Watts brought this case to challenge the constitutionality of Sarbanes-Oxley on separation of powers grounds. Free Enterprise Fund and Beckstead and Watts seek declaratory and injunctive relief, and they want essentially a declaratory judgment and an injunction barring the board from taking any further action because it is unconstitutionally set up. The case was heard before the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit last year, and the D.C. Circuit, relying heavily on Morrison against Olson, upheld the constitutionality of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board in a 2-1 decision. There was a powerful dissenting opinion written by Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who set out powerful separation of powers arguments against the constitutionality of the board. There are two major separation of powers problems with the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. The first is that it unconstitutionally limits the president's removal power over subordinate officers in the executive branch. And the second is that it unconstitutionally provides for appointment of individuals by the Securities and Exchange Commission who should be nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And I will talk about each of these two issues, the removal issue and the appointments clause issue, in turn. With respect to the removal issue, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board is, as I said, an independent agency within an independent agency. Its members, its five directors, are appointed by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The members of the Securities and Exchange Commission are independent of the president. They can only be removed by the president for cause and not at will. And they, in turn, appoint and have power of removal over the five members of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, which members they can only remove for cause and not at will. So there are two layers of independence here rather than one. The Supreme Court has never upheld this degree of independence before. The Supreme Court did, in a famous case from the 1930s, Humphrey's Executor, the Supreme Court did uphold independent agencies in a few narrow contexts, but never before has the court been asked to rule on the constitutionality of an independent agency appointed by another independent agency. In Morrison against Olson, its most recent case addressing the issue of the separation of powers and the scope of the removal power, the Supreme Court said that it is unconstitutional to make an entity too independent of the president, and it would certainly seem that that's what was done here. Constitutional text and history and practice all suggest that the president has and ought to have the removal power over all officers within the executive branch, essentially over all officers who do not work for Congress or for the Supreme Court. The constitutional text gives the president the executive power and the duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. This grant of power and this duty have long been interpreted as giving the president the power to fire subordinates at will, to remove them. That's why new presidents fire their predecessors' cabinet and sub-cabinet officers and bring in a new administration with them. And our history confirms that in general, with a handful of exceptions where independent agencies have been allowed, the general rule is one of presidential power to remove. The leading case that holds that the president generally has power to remove all non-legislative and judicial officers at will is a 1926 case called Myers against United States, written by Chief Justice William Howard Taft, the only man to serve as both Chief Justice and as President of the United States. And the court in Myers laid down a general rule of presidential removal power. 9 years later, in Humphrey's Executor, the Supreme Court did hold that in a few narrow situations where an agency was exercising quasi-legislative, quasi-judicial, and quasi-executive powers, the president's removal power could be confined somewhat. And on the basis of the Humphrey's Executor precedent, a few independent agencies have been allowed. The most prominently known independent agencies are the Securities and Exchange Commission itself, the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Reserve Board, and the National Labor Relations Board. Never before, however, has an independent agency been allowed to appoint another independent agency itself. And I think the Supreme Court, in reviewing this issue, will conclude that here Congress has impermissibly intruded on the president's power of removal. This is really a flagrant violation of the idea that the president ought to have control over the executive branch and the ability to remove executive branch subordinates. The second major issue raised by this statute in terms of the separation of powers is that the statute violates the Appointments Clause. The members of the board are again unconstitutionally appointed because they are appointed by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and they should, in fact, be nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate. The Appointments Clause of the Constitution describes two different kinds of officers within the executive branch. There are principal officers who must be nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate, like, for example, the cabinet secretaries and the U.S. attorneys. And there are also inferior officers who do not need to be nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate. Inferior officers may be appointed by the President alone, by the heads of departments, or by the courts of law. The theory of Sarbanes-Oxley in creating the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board is that the five members of the board are inferior officers appointed by the Securities and Exchange Commission, functioning as the head of a department to serve in their role as members of the board. There are a number of reasons why the argument that the members of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board are inferior officers is unpersuasive. First, the Supreme Court has laid out a test recently in a case called Edmund against United States that describes how to draw the line between principal and inferior officers. And the test that Justice Scalia laid out in that case is that an inferior officer, by definition, must be someone who is subject to supervision and control by a superior. To be an inferior, you must have a boss who supervises and controls what you do and can alter what you do. The members of the board in this case do not fall easily within that description. They're not removable at will by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and that is one of the best ways in which the commission might be able to supervise or control them. They're not subject to either the president's or arguably even the Securities and Exchange Commission's ability to supervise and control what they do in specific enforcement actions or in specific enforcement proceedings. And thus, to that extent, they're also not inferior officers. The types of activities that the board undertakes are, in addition, not the sorts of activities one would expect to be undertaken by inferior officers, because they are very important activities. So, for example, the power of board members to start and stop enforcement proceedings and investigations is very much like the power of U.S. attorneys to start and stop criminal prosecutions. This is a power that traditionally for 220 years we've placed in principal officers nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate rather than in inferior officers. Where inferior officers exercise this power, they are always subject to direct control and supervision and at-will removal by a principal officer. So Sarbanes-Oxley then violates the Appointments Clause because the members of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board are not inferior officers, they're principal officers, and as such they should have been nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate rather than appointed by the SEC. There is an additional appointments clause problem with treating the members of the board as if they are inferior officers, which is that one would have to conclude for them to be inferior officers that the SEC, which appoints the board, is what the Constitution calls the head of a department. The phrase, the head of a department, in the text of Article 2 of the Constitution, clearly contemplates a single person, like a cabinet secretary, who is the head of a department and appoints an inferior officer. Here, the SEC, which is a commission, is allegedly the head of a department, and that's why it's okay for the board members to be treated as inferior officers. It violates common sense principles of textualism to argue that a commission with multiple members, like the SEC, is the head of a department. Clearly, the phrase the head of a department in the constitutional text contemplates a single person. The bottom line, then, is that Sarbanes-Oxley and its creation of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board unconstitutionally infringes on the separation of powers, first, because it unconstitutionally limits presidential removal power, and second, because it unconstitutionally provides for the appointment of officers in violation of the Appointments Clause of Article 2 of the Constitution. The cure for this deficiency, if the Supreme Court does agree with Judge Kavanaugh's dissenting opinion below that it's a deficiency, is actually a very easy one. Essentially, what Congress could do is simply provide that the members of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board must be nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate, and the statute providing for that should also omit any provision about removal for cause. If the members of the board were nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate and removable at will by the President, there would be no constitutional problem with the board, and so this would completely cure the separation of powers problem with Sarbanes-Oxley. Alternatively, Congress could allow for the Securities and Exchange Commission to appoint, remove, and direct in detail all actions of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. In that case, the SEC would be the principal officer appointing the inferior officers who are members of the board. The preferable solution would be for board members to be nominated by the President and confirmed by the Senate. The final point about this case that's important to know about is its implications for the constitutional law, separation of powers more generally. And this case, as I said at the beginning, is the most important separation of powers case of the last generation. It raises both the removal power and the appointments power issues that the Supreme Court addressed in Morrison against Olson in 1988. Morrison against Olson was a 7-1 decision upholding the constitutionality of the former Independent Counsel Act, and the only justice to dissent in Morrison against Olson was Justice Antonin Scalia. For the court to revisit Morrison against Olson at this time would be significant because there are only two members of the Supreme Court currently on the Supreme Court who were serving when Morrison was decided: Justice Scalia, who dissented in Morrison, and Justice John Paul Stevens, who joined the majority opinion in Morrison. The other seven justices of the court will all have been appointed since Morrison against Olson was handed down. This raises a serious possibility that the court might reconsider Morrison or at least limit its range and scope. It seems especially possible that the court might do that because the Sarbanes-Oxley structure of an independent agency within an independent agency is such a novelty. The Supreme Court did undermine Morrison in a subsequent Appointments Clause decision in Edmund against United States in 1997, and in that case, the court seemed to adopt aspects of Justice Scalia's dissenting opinion with respect to the line between principal and inferior officers. The decision in Morrison v. Olson has been widely and roundly criticized across the legal spectrum for the last 21 years. Former Harvard Law School Dean Elena Kagan, who is now Solicitor General of the United States, wrote an important article that clearly cast doubt on Morrison v. Olson several years ago, and many other scholars and public officials have as well. In addition, the widespread belief that the independent counsel law was dysfunctional in part for reasons that Justice Scalia explained in his dissent in Morrison against Olson led to that law being allowed to lapse and go out of existence in 1999. So Morrison v. Olson looks very much like a potentially embattled precedent, and a precedent that could conceivably be narrowed as a result of this case. Justice Thomas, who has joined the court since Morrison v. Olson, and probably also Justice Kennedy, have joined opinions in the separation of powers area in the past, which suggests that they might be open to some narrowing of Morrison or curtailing of it. And Justices Roberts and Alito and Breyer have all said things at different points in time that suggest that there might be some possibility that they would be open to a narrowing of Morrison v. Olson as well. In sum, this is a very important case, and it will shape separation of powers law for some time to come, and it promises to be of historic importance.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.